To wrap up today's show, Jan Hawken is going to be talking with Jeff Lidicote and Sandra Comstock with Right to Survive, a houseless advocacy and direct action organization run by and for unhoused residents of Portland and their allies. Jeff Lidicote has brought a couple friends from the community, but he is also an artist and a board member, and Sandra Comstock is a sociologist and ambassador for Right to Survive. They're going to be talking about the current campaign for a houseless village in inner southeast Portland. Jan?
Well, welcome to KBOO, Jeff, Michael, and Sandra. And our host introduced you, so let's go right to the description of Right to Survive, what the organization does, particularly around self-organizing among the houseless.
Great. As Jeff mentioned, we are run by and for the houseless community. We have bi-monthly meetings in which we discuss what's on the agenda in terms of concerns in the community.
At Sisters of the Road.
At Sisters of the Road on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month. Everybody's invited.
At 5.
At 5. Thank you, Jeff. Keeping me on task.
The devil's in the details.
Yes. But we have a lot of different programs we do. We actually have our own radio show as well, and we do a lot of media work, but we also have workshops where we bring housed and unhoused people together to both discuss the problems and educate about our unhoused neighbors experience on the street, but also to problem solve. We're trying to work on having neighbors start to think about the ways in which they can work together, regardless of housing status, to solve problems, small problems, right in their own communities themselves, even.
So, Michael, you're here today because you've been houseless for some time and are going to be sharing with us some of your experience with recent sweeps and kind of what it's like living in communities where you grew up, but yet find yourself houseless and
right.
displaced. And maybe to set the stage for that, Jeff, could you say a little bit about over 35 years you've been working? You were part of the group around Dignity Village. Could you say a bit about what's changed and what hasn't changed in organizing around the houseless? And also, why do you prefer the term houseless to homeless?
Most of all, what hasn't changed is just why gulf between the reality of what homeless, so-called homeless people are and what they face and public perceptions or just in general. So, for example, even in the lead-in from the voiceover person to this program, he said that people lack a house to call a home. Well, what I, for example, am staying in may not be a house. It has a much lower carbon footprint than that. It's a structure. And I call it home. I get exactly the same feeling when I'm headed to my, we call them a hooch, as if when I'm headed to home and I'm going to listen to, say, KBOO radio, I get exactly the same feeling as if I was heading into a house and was going to watch television. Exactly the same. The perception.
The claiming of the term home is itself
I don't even like the term houseless because my that is my house. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, put effort into keeping it clean, not on and orderly, and even aesthetically pleasing on the outside. But I can pretty much guarantee that at least 50% of the houses, apartments in inner southeast Portland, there's more ambiance in my hooch than there is in their apartments. So
that's one of the stereotypes.
Yeah,
that
and another one is that the homeless are a threat to the public safety and health, when in fact it's housed people for the most part with their carbon footprint that are a threat to, you know, the survival of the species. When you see a bunch of garbage at near somebody's hooch, well, that's not really their garbage. They've really just diverted that temporarily from the waste stream. I'm not pointing this at KBOO listeners, but it's y'all's garbage. It's that mostly the house. And when you're constantly being pushed around by the police and not enabled to, you know, maintain any semblance of stability in your life, you're going to be a little, especially when after they sweep you, they then come through with a cleanup crew. So that kind of encourages people not to be all that dedicated to cleaning up.
May I chime in for just I think what would we do if we didn't have a city that came by and took our garbage from us? What would we do if we didn't have a bathroom to use?
If they didn't have an army of street cleaners and a garbage pail on every corner downtown, those people would be neck deep in McDonald's wrappers within a week.
And then there's also the issue that, Michael, you've raised about what's considered garbage and how your own possessions that you've accumulated and put together and tended to are sometimes regarded as though they're garbage. Mm-hmm. Can you say something about your recent experience with
yes,
the sweeps?
My bedding was taken, the cushion that I chose to sleep on, and it was not in great shape, and it was used, but they decided that it wasn't good anyway, and so they took it and threw it away. The tent I was just in was too big for a sidewalk, and it's not in good shape, so he cut from the window down to the ground, and I was to walk out of it. I was told I had 15 minutes. When that 15 minutes was up, I could no longer shop through my stuff to grab anything else.
That was the term the police
Yeah, that
used,
was yeah. that was the police officer's term. You know, and I had to allow the cleanup crew to take the rest of my belongings. They took a cook stove that I had, the only thing I could cook on, my cooler that had my food in it because I had no way to back it off. You know, it's just terrible.
So what about these sweeps that have been, as you say, Jeff, they've been going on a very long time.
But last week, last month, last year, last decade, same old thing. It's the policy is to harass the homeless in the hopes that they'll move or
disappear.
Do something to go indoors, maybe rob something, or commit suicide. And it's not.
So that's what you're calling for is the end of sweeps. Could you say something about the surveillance district?
Yes,
in
it's
Portland.
Actually, we call it, it's a, the so-called name is Enhanced Service District. However, we like to call it the Enhanced Surveillance District because there's tracking of houseless people and there's harassment of houseless people. Now, two of these already exist.
Just this downtown?
In downtown Portland, there's the Clean and Safe, which is 200-something blocks. There's one in Lloyd. And now they want to establish a new one. Now, we already have the regular sweeps that happen through one point of contact, the city policies. We already have over-policing. 52% of all arrests are of houseless people, and largely for things related to camping and to failure to appear in court because it's hard to get to places when you can't leave your camp for a minute. So we already have those things in place. We've asked, a number of us have asked through a compassionate response for the city to halt these policies. However, on the other side, business people in the South Central East side are calling for more surveillance, more security, and more sweep. So this as we speak, the Central
East. To the tune of $2 to $3 million.
Yeah, so the Central East Side Industrial Council is a private business alliance which are trying to create this so-called Enhanced Service District.
So that's private people hiring additional private people to go out and do things like take people's property. So, that's vigilantism.
Right. This district is composed of 77 city blocks and is located between the area of Burnside and Powell Boulevard, up from the river all the way to 12th Avenue. They are asking the city, this private board is asking the city to allow them to levy an additional property tax on all property owners within this area so that they will control this 12-member board, which is made up mostly of business owners, which they plan to spend on almost a million of this money will be spent on security, which will be looking around for houseless people, calling in the police when they want, increasing the amount of policing. And a million also includes the cleaning crews. But this program is not unsimilar to the ones downtown that I mentioned. These private security forces, we know, sharply increase calls to police on our homeless neighbors. And these taxpayer-funded private cleaning crews also increase city cleaning programs, which force unhoused residents to remove all their survival gear that they can carry on their backs, and then trash any additional survival gear that they can't carry or have left behind for a few hours in order to make their appointments that they need to make.
And let me tell you, it's just flat insane. By definition, homeless people are already on the edge. For housed people to take away or advocate the taking away of that thin film of security that is provided by camp gear and the rest is nuts.
So Michael, how do you interact with people on a daily basis, or do you try to enlist people to have more empathy for the vulnerability that all humans feel to some extent? And maybe that's part of what's scary about seeing houseless people, is it reminds everyone of our essential vulnerability.
I've had people tell me, get out of my neighborhood. And it's my neighborhood as well.
So that's, you know, one appeal.
Yeah, as he's shaking my friend's tent and trying to harass her up, you know, and awake. But I've had him threaten me. I tell them, I'm not there to cause you any harm. I'm a single 55-year-old woman. You know, I'm not there. I clean up. I have swept streets before people began their work day.
You try to be a good neighbor.
Yeah, I swept sidewalks. I swept the whole block.
It's another use of the term sweeping.
I mean, I clean it up so that when people start going to work, that it doesn't look all trashed. I don't want it to look trashed around me.
And if you don't like the look of homeless camps, take a look at your creosote-soaked poles, your tar roads, your wires strung everywhere from left to right, to north to south, to east to west, and tell me that that's not an aesthetic nightmare. Oh, and not to mention your cars.
Yeah, and so there's something outrageous about the self-righteousness of people who dare, who are so critical of the houseless.
And I heard on the news one day that the news folks clearly said, if you see these camps pop up in your neighborhood, make as many calls as you can to get somebody to respond.
Anybody that interfaces with the city government at all is prompted the same way.
So in closing, our listeners can go onto the website to learn more about the actions and the history and the activity of Right to Survive, right2survive.org.
And why don't they go out and talk to a homeless person?
Yeah.
Why don't they go and make a friend with them?
So that's part of what it means to have more dialogue and relationships between the housed and houseless people. Mm-hmm. How can people contribute in closing?
Well, I guess in closing, I would say we think that the solution is to end sweeps and to look and figure out why this over-policing has happened. And we think that both of those things can be effectively combated by setting up stable, safe, and equitable sleeping, living, washing, and bathroom access for our neighbors who live on the streets.
And get involved. During this Trump era, the people that are real vulnerable to falling through the crack are your neighbors. Mm-hmm. Phone 503-839-9992.
Thank you so much for being with us today, and keep up the good work. We'll continue to follow this incredible self-organizing. Even in spite of what you face, you keep going, so that itself is inspiring. Okay.
I pick flowers and put them outside my tent.
Okay. It's Jan Hocken talking today with members of Right to Survive, a community-based group here in Portland. Keep
Thank
up the
you
good
for
work.
Having us.